Over the next week, we're going to be focusing on the very important issue of student debt. And before we hear from students and college presidents and others, we want to look at what the $1 trillion problem of student debt means for all of us, whether we have student debt or not. Joining us now are two leading economists, Diane Swonk, chief economist with Mesro Financial in Chicago. Hi, Diane.
Good to be here.
And Mohammed El-Arian is also with us. He's chief economic advisor at Allianz SE. He's with us from KUCI in Irvine, California. Mohammed, welcome back to you.
Thank you.
And let me start with you, Mohammed. And these figures are just striking. We're talking about more than $1 trillion in student loan debt. What impact is that having on the economy? We'll talk about what it could do in a moment. But what is that already doing to our economy?
So first, not only is the absolute number very large, $1 trillion, but it's grown really rapidly. It has more than doubled in the last 10 years. So there's something significant going on. On the positive side, we as a society are investing much more in human capital, providing more opportunities to more people to go to college. That's the good side. And there's reasons why that is not just an economic imperative, but also a social imperative. However, there tends to be tipping points. The first tipping point is when the cost of education becomes higher than the return on education. And while we're not there yet, we're getting closer. It's getting more expensive to educate, and the return to education has come down. And the second tipping point is when the individual can no longer cope with the burden of debt. And that becomes a concern not just to the individual, but to society as a whole, because it tends to inhibit social mobility, it tends to inhibit spending, and it tends to lower the potential.
Diane Swonk, is this as big of a problem as the buildup in mortgage debt was before that financial crisis?
It's a different kind of problem. I think, you know, Mohammed really hits the nail on the head by saying we are investing in human capital. The mortgage crisis wasn't about investing in human capital. We know the people who currently default on student debt tend to be people who have gotten a for-profit, non-accredited education. It's about $12,000 on average that they're defaulting. And then there's a group of a very small sliver that have a very large debt, and they went and got a graduate degree in something like law, and now they work for an institution that doesn't pay very much and they can't service that debt. They chose to go nonprofit. They get some ease on that, but that's where the other place where we're seeing the defaults. What's interesting is how many people, some surveys say as many as 40% of people, and this gets to one of Mohammed's tipping points, are now saying an education isn't worth it, because you've got this whole cohort of millennials who not only went into school and took on debt to go into school, but they graduated into a labor market where entry-level wages were hit hardest of any wages out there. It was just easier to lower the wage of someone you hadn't hired yet than to actually lower the wage of someone you'd hired. And so they got less of a return to their education on their income at the same time that they took on more debt, either because their families couldn't afford it or because we also liberalized these student loans in a way to try to facilitate people going to school. But it really has this sort of collision course and these tipping points that I think are critical down the road.
So it sounds like what you're saying is your biggest fear here is not about something that the debt would do on its own. It's dissuading people from going to college, which is something that we see that you need in order to compete in a certain level of this economy.
Exactly. It undermines the whole incentive structure. And as Mohammed accurately pointed out, the returns to education are diminishing, although they're still higher. It, you know, the San Francisco Fed has done some work on this. They think it takes until you're about 40 years old to get beyond the debt and reap the returns in this labor market. That's a long time to wait. We really need to start thinking in terms of what ways can we reform the system so that we get not people just getting paid for going into college, but getting paid for graduating, going on to graduate school, and reaping the returns of it in society? How can we better create transparent for people taking on debt so they take on smarter debt as well?
Mohammed, what's the nightmare scenario from your perspective? What could happen? Could we see a crisis like we did in 08 because of all the student debt?
So the nightmare scenario, which we saw, as Diane said, with mortgage financing, which we're seeing today in China with the stock market, is what starts out as a very good social objective becomes an economic and financial disaster. If you think of what created the mortgage crisis, it was initially this idea, this correct idea, that higher home ownership is a good thing for society. But it wasn't monitored properly. It wasn't implemented properly. And we ended up with a crisis. Today, China's going through the same thing. They made the decision that having more people participate in the stock market would facilitate the transition to a market economy. Well, you know what? They implemented it in an excessive manner. So the big risk is what starts out as a good social objective becomes an economic and financial problem that then has all these unintended consequences. And that's why it's still manageable, right? As Diane said, if you look at where the problems are, they're actually quite concentrated. You know, Diane and I, every Friday, every first Friday of every month, we obsess over the employment report.
Right.
If you look at what the latest employment report says, it's very clear. If you're over 25, the unemployment rate, if you're over 25, is 4.1%. If you didn't finish high school, your unemployment rate is twice that, it's 8%. But if you finish college, it's just 2.5%. So it does make a difference, even at the aggregate. And that's why it's important to do something about it now.
One of the things that has never made sense to me is if you look back, you know, even 10, 11 years ago, the cost of college was, you know, at your high-end private schools, you would be paying something like $35,000 a year. If you look at that now, it's almost double. It hasn't quite doubled, but it's almost double. How is it possible that we have allowed college to get so expensive that people are willing to pay so much more than they were just 10 years ago?
Well, this gets back to, you know, Mohammed's point about unintended consequences. You know, the good news is we've invested in human capital. The bad news is when you've got a fixed number of seats in college and you've got more money going towards it via student loans, the price is going to go up. That's really economics 101. And what we've seen is tuition costs really were supported right through the crisis because of people's access to these student loans. And it had this unintended consequence, again, well intentions on getting people, you know, the capital they needed, especially in a harder economy. Being in school was productive. That's not a bad thing. But the other side of it was that it helped to push up, artificially inflate tuition costs and the wages of, you know, many people that, while the rest of wages in the economy were stagnating. So we also know that students think differently about student debt, and I think they should, but it's really interesting is they also think of it as a hurdle to get over. They don't think of it, most people, if you have a car debt, you think of your monthly payment. If you have a mortgage payment, it's the payment. It's not the size of the mortgage. What we found is many students actually view the debt they have as student debt as a hurdle to overcome. And that way they don't spend, even if they could, they don't spend as much as they would otherwise.
And it's stopping them from even doing things like getting married or having kids or saving for retirement to the same degree. Mohammed El-Erian, what can the government do about it at this point? What would, if you could wave a magic wand and have Washington do what you wanted, what would it be?
So the first thing is to realize there is no killer app. There is no one approach that's going to solve this.
Right.
You need a menu that goes from the general to the specific. The general, part of the gridlock in Washington has been to hold back economic growth. And we get stuck in this low growth equilibrium, the new normal, the new mediocre, the secular stagnation, whatever you want to call it. That's not an economy that provides high returns on education, doesn't provide these sorts of opportunities. So the first thing is just to continue working hard on what you need to promote the environment. The second is the education system. Part of the problem has been that the education process hasn't evolved as quickly as the real world. So education reform is important. Financial aid becomes critical, and there's area for philanthropy to play in this. And finally, there are lots of focused element, making sure that the repayments are income-based. You know, it does matter where you are in the wealth spectrum. If you look at the bottom 25% of the households, those with net worth of less than $8,500, they owe over 58% of this student loan debt.
And how much of this do you think will be solved by just market forces, people deciding to do the kinds of things that you're talking about? Or how much of it is if none of the steps are taken by the government that you laid out, Mohammed, that 5 years from now, if I had you back on, you'd say we're in a much, much worse position?
So market forces will not solve this to a sufficient degree. There's all sorts of typical market failures that require some sort of intelligent government intervention. The worst thing you can have is both market failure and government failure. And unfortunately, that's what we're having right now.
Mohammed El-Erian, Chief Economic Advisor at Allianz SE, and Diane Swank, Chief Economist with Mesirow Financial. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.